every day I'm just grateful that I can wake up and my eyes work and I can hug the people that I love because my arms work and I can just be because my heart beats and that still works. So every time something is hurting to the point where it hurts so bad and it's just, you're in so much pain, what I try to do is I just concentrate on something that doesn't hurt. Because for every like sorrow, you can always find 50,000 non-sorrows and so many beautiful blessings.
Welcome to Backseat Driver. I'm your host, Nikki Bennett, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm here to help you navigate the twists and turns of life using real-world advice from me and my guests. Together, we illustrate how our greatest struggles often wind up being our greatest strengths. Thanks for listening.
One of my favorite quotes that I'm sure we're all familiar with is, "Life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass. It's learning to dance in the rain." Mary Martin, our guest today, is the epitome of learning to dance in the rain. She's not only an incredibly gifted dancer, she's an amazing mother and wife, and an inspiring and talented coach. Mary, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, you bet. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Your story has always inspired me, and I would love to have you share it with my listeners today. Tell me about life growing up in Texas.
Awesome. Right? Oh, gosh. When I think about this question and I reflect on when I was growing up, all I can do honestly is just smile. Like, oh, I just, and I think back to it and it smells like rain and sunshine. I hear crickets, thunder, and the horn from a train. And then when I close my eyes, I feel safe. I feel as if anything is possible, as long as music is playing in my heart. Mm. Yeah, I grew up down south in Texas, and I had such a happy childhood.
And you're one of how many kids? Remind me, 7?
There's 5 of us, so I'm number 4.
Okay, 4
and
of 5.
And that's funny you asked that, because we were known as the big family down the street. That's awesome.
And your mom, if I remember correctly, your mother was a dance instructor, and that's how you got involved in dance. Is that right?
She was. And that's interesting that you brought that up, because when I've been reflecting on this conversation that we were going to have, my mom said that I came out of the womb dancing and just singing and just dancing all the time. And, yes, my mom was a dancer. And it's funny when we say was, because I think when you were a dancer, quote, were a dancer, you're always a dancer.
Yeah.
You know, in your heart. And yes, so she was a dancer and is still a dancer.
Tell us a little about your dancing experience or your dancing career. I know you traveled all over the world. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Yeah. So my mom's dance company, it was just a little dance company and dancing and performing company. And so she was the one who taught me that dance could be anything. It could be, and it was like my happy place, my safe space. And as long as I was having a good time, that, and I was expressing who I truly was at my core, that it was such a beautiful form of expression. And, So I've been to Spain. I performed at the World Fair and Africa and Mexico. And
what did dance do for you?
Oh, I love that question, because I feel as if it's not what it did for me, it's what didn't it do, you know? Mm-hmm. Dancing taught me that I could always be me. And dancing was so much more than just, you know, counts to a piece and steps and polishing. And dance is a true form of expression, a true form of who I was. And dance just gave me everything. It gave me a sense of who I was, and it gave me a way to express how I was feeling. Dance, honestly, I would say most importantly, helped me get in tune with the music in my heart. and to like stay in tune with who I was and who I am.
Tell us a little bit about who you were and are. I know you, but our listeners don't. I wish everyone could know you.
Who am I? That's an interesting question. Oh. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm a dancer and I've been one all my life.
You know, I love that you said that, because I've been puzzling on this for a while now, ever since one of my younger clients, she's probably 24. She said to me, "No, I got married at 21 and I didn't even know who I was." And I kind of giggled and said, "I'm 47 and I have no idea who I am. But the older I get, I think I learn more who I'm not." Mm-hmm. So I think it's also interesting that you said, "I know what dance didn't do for me."
Mm. Yeah. Exactly. I guess, and that's interesting that you brought that up, because dance is pure. Art is pure. It's beautiful. It's untapped. It's untamed. And anyone and everyone has a way, can be a dancer or an artist or a poet, or, you know, just it can express themselves. And I think dance, if anything, has taught me who I am at my core. At my core, my essence, and has taught me that to how to express myself.
Yeah, and sometimes there are no words to express life or who you are or how you're feeling. So dancing, it sounds like, is just an expressive form for you.
Yes.
Would you be willing to tell our listeners the painful story about when your whole world really came crashing down?
Totally. That's so interesting, because, like, you know, you go throughout your life, you tell your story, you talk to your friends, you talk about it over and over, but it's not a new conversation. But each time I do have this conversation, my heart pounds I have like this such a physical reaction to what, you know, I've experienced. And my gut gets all clenched up and my hands start shaking. And then I just have to remind myself that it's just life. You know, it's just another dance. It's just learning how to dance again in a different way.
Quick question before we get into your stories. What gives you the courage to share it, if that's the experience? And what you're saying resonates with me, right? It's like every time you tell your story, it's reopening that wound a little bit. What gives you the courage to do that?
Mm-hmm.
What's your why?
I think if anything, if my story could just touch and help one person, then it's all worth it. Because at the end of the day, I'm my own author of my story, and I am I'm my own, you know, choreographer of my own dance. And so my story isn't complete and my dance isn't complete. So I don't even know if the word courage is the right word. It's just hopefully I can be helpful kind of thing. I guess I would say, like, dun, 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 in the beginning, it all goes back. So in April of 2004, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And it's interesting because I keep going back to this thought. When I did get diagnosed, I've always had music in my heart. I've always had music in my soul. I've always had music playing in my head. But when I got diagnosed, the music changed. It was a different tune. It was melancholic, and just, it wasn't the same. I didn't know how to identify with that music in my heart. And it was really, really hard, because I was 27 and my world just stopped.
And you were active, right? Hadn't you been rock climbing that weekend?
Yes. And I just had been married a year. I was down south, down in the San Rafael Swell, and we were doing some canyoneering, and Yeah. By the time I got home from my canyoneering trip, I couldn't feel anything from my neck down. Now, previous to that, I would say about 2 years before all of that, my hands started to go numb on and off in like my midsection, but I was also working and going to school full time. I was dancing. I was just like, oh, it's fine. I'm stressed or whatever. And I would shake it off like no big deal because it's just like, I don't know. Right. And so after I get home from this double crazy hike with my husband, who's insane, oh my gosh. And then I was like, it's just because I'm out of shape. But I was like, no, I'm not out of shape. I'm actually really, I was really in shape. I couldn't, like I said, I couldn't feel anything from the neck down. And then I finally got in to see a doctor. My husband, his name's Rich. He wouldn't give up on, he was trying to get me in all day and they wouldn't take me in. And finally this one doctor did. Long story short, they did an MRI and they said that they think that I had plaques or white spots on my spine, and that I probably had, I heard of MS and all of that. And I was like, what? No, I don't even know what that is. What are you talking about? Anyways, after that, we got in touch with a neurologist. They took a look at my MRIs and they did more tests. And yeah, long story short, within 6 weeks, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And I guess that's a blessing because, well, I think it's a blessing. Well, I have to, let me rewind a bit. We were going the day of figuring out what was going on with my world. Like what is going on? And it was my husband and my father and I, and we were in the elevator. And before we went up, my husband, Rich, said, okay, I want everybody to take a minute. And I want everybody to think of 5 things that they're grateful for right at this moment. And so whatever is on the other side of this elevator, let's refer back to those 5 things in life and always. And so that's always like stuck to my heart, ever, that saying.
Do you remember what your things were, Mary?
I do remember saying to myself, I'm grateful that I have a husband who loves me. I'm grateful that there's doctors and options. And I'm grateful that I can be here in this moment. But I don't remember anything else, to tell you the truth. But that's a really good question. I should actually ask my husband and my dad what they thought. And yeah. So then we go into the doctors and they tested me for all kinds of things that I didn't even know. I was like, what? I don't even know. I can't even pronounce this. Like, what is this? And I was like, well, I guess if anything, I'll take that one, you know, if I were to. And so I'm like thinking, okay, is it going to be that bad? And I don't have it. Like, I don't have that. Nobody in my family has that. I don't even know what it is. Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, it came out that sure enough, I had MS, multiple sclerosis. And then, so that was in 04. And then, you know, you deal with what you just heard and you're trying to process what you just heard and everything's like an out of body experience. You're in the doctor's office and they're talking, but you're like, you're listening, but you're not listening. You're like floating above your head. And you're like, this is not my life. Like this got, like, you want to have like a mute button and just be like, mute, scene, you know, time out, you know. But anyways, So that's happening. And I just had been married about a year and I was super psyched about life, you know, and like, I was super excited about planning a family and just like, just being me and like dancing. And I wasn't really prepared for this type of roadblock that was thrown in my path. And then we talked to some OBs about getting pregnant and talked to our neurologist about getting pregnant, and they advised us not to, and they said it's not a good idea for people like you, quote, like you, to have children. And And if anybody knows me, if you tell me no, I'm going to do the exact opposite and just go like, oh, hell no, you can't tell me no. Like, what do you mean I can't have babies? I'm sorry. I'm 27. I'm not 97. Like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. So we decided to go ahead and go forward with our plans of a family. And we got pregnant and, you know, 9 months, 10 months later, I had a sweet baby boy who's just been the most beautiful thing in my life. And I was like, see, what do they know? They don't know. I can have a baby. Anyways, it's not, and I guess they were saying it's not that I can't have babies. They just advised against it because the trauma and the harshness of having a baby and what it does to your body exacerbates and brings out MS, like it's dormant, you know, that it, like it's been sleeping and it's been awoke. Now it's this crazy, angry dragon coming out and being wreaking havoc. And so I had Ryder, and then about within 3 weeks, I had to decide, am I going to start my medicine again or what am I going to do? You know, and I remember sitting there in my room and it was like an Alice in Wonderland moment, you know, like, okay, on this option, this choice, I cannot take my medicine. I can continue to hopefully breastfeed my baby. But then if I don't take my medicine, then I'm going to get so sick that I won't be here to breastfeed my baby. And then I won't, anyway, so just all of these choices and questions going on in my mind. And I'm thinking to myself, man, this is a lot. Like, all I wanted to do when I grew up is to be a mom and to dance and just to be happy and like have a, like, just, you know, you have it in your head, like, I'm going to have 4 kids, 4.5, I don't know, maybe 4, 5, maybe 5, maybe 3. And I'm going to have my house and I'm going to have my husband and I'm going to have, and it's just going to be amazing. Anyway, so I chose to take my medicine and do all of that. And I got so sick that I had to do Solumedrol treatments, which is kind of funny because I'll tell you why. So Solumedrol is it's an IV fluid medication. And so here we have this newborn and I have this IV and my husband has to like change the IV, milk the baby, like milk me, not the baby. And he's so funny. And that's one thing, Rich, my husband, is he just is constantly bringing laughter into anything and everything. And he would say, 4:30, time for milking. And he'd come and like milk me and then feed the baby and then like change the IV. And anyway, so we just started our life and started to learn how to dance together with this stupid disease. And then I just kept getting sicker and sicker. Long story, long and short of it, I gained a lot of weight. I was up to like 210 pounds. I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't walk. I could walk. I just couldn't walk that well. And I was at the doctor's all the time. MS was me. I wasn't Mary anymore. I was just this patient of just grossness of like going through the motions, going to the doctors, getting more medicine, figuring out, like, I was the epitome of somebody practicing medicine on me.
I remember a story where you literally like fell and couldn't even get yourself up, right?
Yes. And I'm glad you brought that up because when I did that, okay, because I needed to wear, I've a fallen, can't get up button and I didn't want to wear it. I'm like, I didn't want to. I'm like, you can't make me. Anyway, so I did. I fell and I was in between my couch and I don't know, a table. So I was sitting there for probably like 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours, just sitting and contemplating and like really having an honest dialogue with myself. And I was actually talking to the rocks on my fireplace. And I was just like, this is not me. Like, the music, and I was like, I can't even hear the music in my heart anymore. It's gone. It's silent. It's radio silent. Like, not even like white noise. It's just nothing. And I was just like, this is not living. This is just existing. I'm not a wife. I'm not anything. I'm just this lump of nothing. And so then and there, I was like, this is enough. I can't do this anymore. And my husband came in and saw me and walked past me a couple of times and was like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? Anyways, he helped me get up and we sat and talked and I was just like, this is not life. And he agreed. And
how did you get through that? How did you wake up every day facing the same demons? What got you through that?
You know, that's a really, really, really good question. It's a really good inquiry, one that you sit and think about. And I'd have to say what got me up every day was my sweet son, Ryder, and then my husband. Because I was so big, and I'm not a big person. I'm such an active person, and I'm like, I just was so, yeah, I did not like myself. I didn't like anything about myself. And I would sit there and say, just leave me, Rich. This, I'm so gross. Just divorce me. And he was like, okay, you're being a little dramatic. Like, are you big? Yeah, you are, but I'm not going to leave you. Like, I made a promise. Like, stop being so dramatic. Like, we'll figure it out. No big deal. Mm-hmm. So I would say what got me up was laughter and my husband and my son. Just to keep going kind of thing. And then go ahead.
I was going to say, there was a time when things really shifted for you. Uh-huh. And it was after you moved to Montana. Is that right? Or were you already in Montana?
Yeah, no, I was in Montana at this time when I'd fallen and I had the conversations with The Rock and blah, blah, blah. And we decided that this is enough. Enough is enough. I'm quitting all of this medicine. They had me on like, I want to say 28 different prescriptions. They had me on all these treatments, and just the human body is not meant to consume all that medication. So I was whittled off all of that, stopped all of that, started to eat all organically and raw and clean food. And it was hard though, because I really like ice cream and chocolate.
Me too.
I'm like, oh my God. And I remember I remember my family having a conversation and being like, don't take ice cream away from her. That's all she has. And I'm like Chunk on the Goonies. I love it. But, and so then we decided, you know what, this part of me is done. And I worked with a neuromuscular massage therapist. I declared myself cured and I stopped calling it MS and I started calling it Harry. And Harry was this kid in elementary school who just wasn't the nicest guy. So instead of MS, it is now Harry. And Harry and I have been dating on and off for 18 years or so.
Incredible. Tell our listeners about Jenny, because I think she played a really pivotal part too, right?
She did. I completely, thank you for reminding me that. So sweet Jenny, she's my sister. She's a cowgirl. She's the real deal. Like, you don't want to mess with Jenny. And she would come over and I didn't want to like be with her or talk to her. And I didn't want to go for a walk. Jenny, you can't make me go for a walk or whatever. Anyways, one day she came over and she dumped me out of my chair and she's like, this, we're done. Like, you have to get busy living or dying or die. Like, this is, where are you? What are you doing? What's your, like, how can I help you? And she's the one who helped me with the neuromuscular massage therapist. She's the one who helped me like get going and get off some of the medicine that I was on and helped me get out to my favorite tree. And just, she wouldn't give up. She would not take no for an answer.
That gives me goosebumps. So what would you tell our listeners or even me that if it's a really hard, it's a hard, delicate balance to strike when someone you love is suffering, right? Like, I think about mental illness. You can't actually force someone to get help with mental illness or with physical illness. So obviously you had something in your heart as well. I think that music was still there. You'd maybe press pause, but it was still there. But what would you tell our listeners about supporting someone they love who's going through something really rough like that?
First, I would tell them to just, I think what I would say to them is, for one, just for a minute, just for a moment, to sit down with them and have them describe to you what they're going through. I would have them close their eyes, and I would have the person tell them in detail, you know, physically, this is what I'm doing, how I'm feeling, mentally, this is how I'm feeling. I don't see color anymore. All I see is sorrow, or all I feel is, you know, hurt and despair. And then just sit with them for a while and be with them for a while. But then also, on the other hand, gently remind them that, yes, that is going on, and that that sucks. I'm so sorry. But gently remind them of who they are at their essence, at their core, remind them of the music in their heart, and remind them that, yes, but there's more to you than that. You know, there's more to you than all of that.
I'll never forget, Mary, when I met you. I had just moved here from Seattle, and I showed up at Zumba, and in walks this woman, this beautiful woman who dances like, oh my gosh, like you said, you were born dancing. I'll never forget it. And we quickly became friends, and I'll never forget the story of you saying, you know, first I walked to the front door, and then I walked to my favorite tree, and then I walked to the end of the driveway, and now you're dancing. So tell us about life today for you, and tell us about what inspired you to become a coach.
Life today for me is interesting. It's different. You know, it's like I said earlier, I'm growing, still evolving and changing. And I'm the author of my own story, and, you know, the choreographer of my own dance. And I think the mindset that I shifted and the music turned to a different channel in my heart. And when I changed my mind and I decided that I am not a disease. I am me. I'm Mary. I'm happy. I'm kind. I'm compassionate. That's when it all changed for me. And I realized that not a disease or a circumstance or a situation or anything, but nothing in the world can take away my joy and my choice. And every day I have a choice. I can choose joy, or I can choose sorrow. I can choose to let my circumstances dictate how I feel, or I can choose to say, yeah, it's kind of crappy, but today I'm going to dance. I'm just going to do it. It hurts. I can't feel anything. I can wake up and I feel crappy, but I'm going to choose to dance. I'm going to choose to have joy in my life. I'm going to choose not to let my circumstances rule what's going on out with me. I am my captain. I'm going to figure it out, kind of thing. And when I go to the doctors, I don't listen to the doctors. I always have music on, and they can talk to somebody else and tell them, you know.
And you wear your Wonder Woman shirt, right?
Oh, damn straight. I do. And I do. And then when they say, you know, you need to do the drunk walk, you know, because with MS, they need to check your gait. And then, you know, you moonwalk back, and you just kind of have to just have fun with it, because that's the thing. Like, that's the key. Like, this is my experience. This is my story. And I want it to be fun, and I want it to be funny, and I want it to be rad. And when I go get my MRIs, I don't call it they're not MRIs, they're photo shoots. I've had more pictures taken than Tyra Banks. Like, I'm amazing inside. And like, I don't say going to the doctors, I say going on a date, you know. And I don't say I have this disease, I say I'm dating this disease. And it's easier to talk about Harry. It's easier to say, you know, Harry's being not nice today. Harry's kind of a diva. He thinks it's all about him. So, and it's easier
I remember hearing that you originally thought you had a type of MS that wasn't as serious, and ended up you have a more progressive type. Tell us what life with Harry is like today, if you'd be willing. And because I see you, you'd still dance, you still hike, you enjoy your family, you enjoy the outdoors, you do so many things, and such a source for good in the world. Tell us what the behind the scenes is like, if you will.
Mm. That's an interesting question. Because isn't that so true? You see your friends, or you see people in life, and you're like, oh, they're outwardly, everything looks perfect. It looks amazing. They've got it all together. And so, but behind the scenes for me, it's hard. It's really hard. Mine is secondary progressive MS, and it's taken a toll, you know. Harry and I have been dating to the point where it's time to take it to the next level. I've accepted it. I've agreed with it, I guess. It's just a different form. It's a different dance. It's a different cha-cha. It's hard to hike. I have my hiking sticks now and I'm slower. But then on the other hand, when you're slower, you have the chance to look around and see more. And you listen more deeply, and you see color brighter, and you hear laughter sweeter. And when one part of your senses is dulled and taken away, all of the other ones hop in and they're heightened. Every day, I'm just grateful that I can wake up and my eyes work, and I can hug the people that I love because my arms work, and I can just be because my heart beats and that still works. So every time something is hurting to the point where it hurts so bad and it's just, you're in so much pain, what I try to do is I just concentrate on something that doesn't hurt. Because for every sorrow, you can always find 50,000 non-sorrows and so many beautiful blessings, quiet blessings, hidden blessings that you can't even understand or grasp until you really look around and see.
I'm speechless, which never happens, but I'm thinking right now about a couple of coaching groups that I'm leading, and the work we're doing right now is leaning into pain and coming up with memories of different pains and traumas we've gone through in our lives or they've gone through. And then what message did that carry and what is the gift of it? And as I hear you tell your story, I just can't help but feel so inspired. Have you always been a person that's like glass half full, or is that something that, is that the bright side of Harry in his awfulness?
You know, and I think I've always been a person, the glass half full. My mom, my family, they always call me Little Mary Sunshine. I'm always the one who is like, if somebody says something negative, I'll come back and say, yeah, but at least we've got blah, 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 or you can have all my candy, or I've always, yeah. And I think that's something that I was born with, something that just has gotten me through a lot of this, that, yeah, this is happening, but this isn't happening, you know? And I always say, when people say, oh, I'm so sorry you have MS, that's horrible, that's awful, I'll say, yeah, I know it is, it's, yeah, but it could always be worse, you know? It can always be worse, no matter what. And thank God it's not worse.
Yeah, yeah. I'll never forget one of our first real conversations when we started taking our masks off and really getting to know each other. And I remember you saying, you know, gosh, I've had a rough run lately, but I still have, just like you said, arms to hug the ones I love. And when I have a dish or a sink full of dirty dishes, that means I have people to feed. And when I have laundry to do, that means I have clothes. And it just was such a good example to me, because I think I was born a Mary Sunshine. My mom always called me that too. But I think as my mask started to come on and I started getting more defensive and trying to protect myself in life, I started to develop a really glass half empty approach. And so I've always just appreciated your example. Tell us about why you decided to become a coach and a little bit about the work that you do, because I think it's so inspiring. And I've had a couple of coaching sessions with you, which I so enjoyed and appreciated.
All right, on. Thank you. Yes. I remember that really quickly. I remember that conversation when our masks started to come off, and it was like an Oprah moment, and it felt so good. And just so like, oh, I love those types of conversations and getting to know people and their why and their story and, you know, how are you and what are you doing and what's your song kind of thing? What's your dance? And
yeah, you got me through the diagnosis of spasmodic dysphonia, I remember, and we named it Marge.
That's right. That's so beautiful. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Oh gosh, I remember that. I would say, I think the reason why I'm going into coaching or have gone into coaching is because I feel like there's so much to learn still in life, and there's so many dances still to learn. And I feel like I feel like I can help people with what they're going through. And I think if you whittle it down to relationships, like, what is your relationship with yourself? And is it a good one? Is it a healthy one? Because I feel like if you have a good relationship with yourself and that you know who you truly are at your core, who you are at, you know, your essence, then you can get through pretty much anything. Like, it's going to be hard, but you're in control. You're the one in the driver's seat. And I just feel like, I don't know. I just feel like I really dig my relationship with myself. And I feel like if I could help other people remember who they are, and the music in their heart can get turned on again, and the music's just jamming and you're dancing and you're doing it, then what a beautiful world this could be, you know? And people wouldn't be, well, we'd still have, you know, sorrow and emotions, but we could regulate those emotions and just be in a good relationship with ourselves. And then in turn, a good relationship with other people, so on and so forth.
I love that. There's always beauty in the sorrows. It takes a while sometimes to recognize it, but what would you say to our listeners who are going through a difficult or challenging time in their lives right now?
First, I would say, I am so sorry, whatever's going on with you. And I would say that you're not alone. And I would say, I would have them close their eyes and put their hand over their heart and just deeply breathe, you know, it's about 7 breaths or so. And I would tell them that they're, like I said, they're not alone. And that there's compassionate people out there, and sending all the, and then that I'm sending compassion towards them, and that the sun will come out again sometime soon, and you'll see the rainbows one more time. And it's not always going to be this dark, and it's not always going to be this hard, and that you're loved. That's what I'd say.
I love that. What a beautiful heart you have, Mary. I've wanted to have you on the show for so long, and I'm so grateful that you are willing to be here and just to really show up and be bold and be brave, because I know you've inspired my life and every life that you touch, including our listeners. So just thank you so much. And tell our listeners how they would get in touch with you.
Oh, well, I'd have to quickly say back, thank you for having me on, and that you inspire me tenfold.
So Mary, how would our listeners get in touch with you to learn more about the work that you're doing?
Y'all can get in touch with me through, just email me at namastemary@gmail.com.
You're the best. Thanks, Mary. I sure love you.
Love you. I appreciate it. And I hope it touches somebody's heart. So.
It already has.
And that's it for another episode of Backseat Driver. Please share any questions with me via email at podcastbackseatdriver@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram at Backseat Driver Podcast. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you're experiencing, you're not alone. I'm here breathing with you, helping you navigate the twists and turns of life from the backseat. Thanks for listening.